Welcome back to Incremental, the Continuous Improvement Podcast. This is our Concepts edition for the week. I am Devin Bodoni of Lycan Precision.
And I'm Uriel Eisen of Austere Manufacturing.
And you have a quote.
All right, the quote is, "You get to choose your hard." Unknown. Yeah, really like the quote. It sort of verges on the grind set, which is kind of weird and not my favorite, but...
Barfy.
I think it's useful to remember, I don't know, that life is hard. And so, not just life, but just life is hard, jobs are hard. Like sometimes in these, there's moments where it feels very hard, whatever you're doing.
You feel like a victim.
And it's like, man, maybe I should do something else. Whether that's like a different project or a different effort in your business or even like a different business entirely. But the reality is every single effort is hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just a silly comparison to be like, this is hard, so maybe I shouldn't do it. Mm. It's more just like, do I like this hard?
Uh-huh.
Or do I like a different hard? Because there are different hards.
Right, right. Yeah, what it made me think of, like, that's a good perspective. My first thought when I read it was more like you get to choose, so make sure that the hard you're picking will move you in the right direction.
Mm, there is that too.
I had a conversation with a friend the other day about automation stuff. He was reaching out because he wanted to start experimenting with the gripper automation system. And he was like, I think I'm ready. I need to, you know, need to start doing some automation stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. Here's kind of the basics. This is what you need to think about. And then I was like, so do you have parts that this will run on? And he was like, I'm not sure. I'm like, well, okay, so of the stuff you have, do you think like the 90th percentile will fit in this group or is it the 10th percentile?
He was like, oh,
probably the 10th percentile. And I was like, okay. I mean, it costs 10% as much as what's going to, an automation system that's going to run the 90th percentile in terms of cash, actual cash outlay. But we
You buy the VTL6.
The what?
Epson six-axis robot for $16,000.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But that's still part loading. It's going to be like pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the kind of what it came back to is like you get to choose again, like both of these options, both these automation implementations are going to be hard to some extent.
Right.
They're going to cost money. They're going to take time. There's going to be frustration and troubleshooting. So like, let's make sure that if you move down this direction, you're aware that like, this is going to solve 10% of your problems, not 90%, and be prepared for, make sure you want to put in the time for a solution that solves 10% versus 90%.
I like that. It also makes, I've had this conversation coincidentally like three times in the last week about Toyota, like 90% planning, 10% execution.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's also sort of similar to what you're saying. It's like an awareness that you're going to choose your hard at the beginning of the project. And so like the whole beginning phase of a project should be ideating around finding the hard. Because I think it's tempting to pick sort of the path of least resistance and run really fast. And then you hit the wall and you're like, oh, this is a dead end. Or like, this is really a mismatch, but you're sort of not actually trying to identify the sticking points.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning when you've invested the least amount of time in a particular direction.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of inconceivable that like sitting around planning for 90% of the time is going to somehow be more efficient. And it's really about reducing rework.
Yeah. And like unknown risk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or unpredictable
risk. So like every single direction is going to have a crux and a hard part.
Yeah.
Or a trade-off of some type.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like finding that. Anyway.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going kind of going through the same thing right now where it's like thinking forward for the next couple of years and like what sort of direction my shop needs to go in for machinery, automation and stuff like that. And all the options seem expensive and hard and I'm like, okay, let's take a step back and really contemplate this for a while.
Yeah, that is true.
But there's the path of least resistance that's like clearly visible. And there's a part of me that's like, let's just do it. Let's just get it done.
The path of least resistance is what in this case?
Would be like a, you know, budget friendly machine that like ticks 7 out of 10 of the boxes, you know, but might not be really where we want to be in 5 years and might, you know,
right,
really add a lot of financial burden to the business that would preclude what we need to do to be where we want to be in 5 years.
I mean, I feel like you saw actually like have pretty good perspective on this with your gripper work. Because you implemented it successfully.
Yeah.
And then kind of didn't have work for it.
Yeah.
And so sort of saw the downside, like the limitations in flexibility of that sort of classic automation, right? It's like this thing does one thing well. I mean, it's still awesome and probably...
No regrets.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I think it definitely paid for itself. We continue to use it for some stuff.
Right.
But it has become clear that, for, at least for our shop, what we're doing right now, it's not our 90% solution. It is our 10% solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Which is unfortunate, but such is life.
Such is life. And then for me, it's my 100% solution.
Yeah.
Not quite. Probably, you know, 99%.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah.
Until you start making some like crane buckles or something.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there. I saw you have this visual controls and automatic links to data are so important.
Yeah. So
what's that about?
Yeah. What is that about?
I have a lot to say on the topic.
Yeah, so we launched our new Airtable base. It's been great. There's a few little like kinks to work out here and there, and like definitely some fine tuning of like,
of course,
where you need to see stuff, how you want to see it, where you want to interact with it, things like that. But like over the overarching, feeling, at least for me, we haven't had a group meeting about it. Is that it's much more intuitive, much simpler to navigate. there's a lot less kind of extraneous information in there. And there's still a lot to build on it, but part of that was having thumbnail images of the CAD data that go along with the part information.
Yeah.
And so that is now visible when we're like going through the different jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also visible on our physical job tags. And it just makes, I don't know, it's this funny thing where like there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to rely on like little pictures. And then as soon as they're there, you're like, this makes everything easier. Why would we not do this?
Right.
Like it is just so effective.
You scrolled through it just before we started recording here.
Yeah.
And like, I could keep up with the speed you were scrolling at, showing me the system and like understanding which jobs were different and which,
yeah,
like, oh, that's a bike pedal or that's a, like at a glance. And like, if those images hadn't been in there, I feel like I would have gotten very little out of you just scrolling through a system because I'm like, I don't really know what a job is or...
Right, right.
Yeah, pretty stark.
Yeah. This has been a general frustration for me with paperless parts, honestly, is there... And it's like one of these... It's classic software, right? It's this very small detail that you end up having to have all these workarounds with.
Mm-hmm.
Their quotes tab... And there are workarounds, like they do exist. Their quotes tab is organized by quote number,
mm-hmm.
like customer. It gives you the total value of the quote in dollars.
Okay.
It doesn't tell you what parts are in that quote. And so you almost always a customer will be like, hey, what's the situation with this part? Or we have a question on this part. And so then you do either the click through of every single one to find the quote that has that part, or you go use their search function, which works. I understand that it works, but to me, it's not the intuitive way to approach it. Someone says, I want to know what the price is for this part. I'm going to go to the quotes tab because that's where the pricing is. Mm. And then I would expect to find a list of the parts, or better yet, the thumbnails for those parts. And it's just wild how often that gets overlooked.
Yeah.
And so then the other part, which we're still mid implementation, was adding QR codes to all of our physical job tags that link back to our work orders. So we're still sort of like, I don't think we've fully are experiencing the benefits of this yet. But I ordered a bunch of QR code scan or barcode scanners. And so I think at this point there will just be zero question. If you scan this tag, you know you are at the record with the correct information.
Right. It's not like, am I on the right version or am I on the, we have two brackets that are mirrored.
Yeah.
Am I?
Exactly. Yeah. And that has been an ongoing challenge with our old system.
Interesting.
Because there were many different instances of each part being produced. We tackled it more or less with like housekeeping, like, and good, you know, best practices kind of stuff, but it still occasionally happened.
Right.
And you had to do a lot of checking and double checking. And now it really will just be like,
you scanned it. That is the thing.
That's the one.
We had a funny conversation about duplicate Kanbans in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And the QR code solves that also for the same reason, which is, who cares if you scan back into the one you're holding in your hand?
Yeah.
Like, you're editing the one in your hand. Like,
yeah, you know,
who cares?
They're linked.
Yeah.
It also allows you to get a lot of information off of the physical side.
Yeah.
And the information can be more live.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we've had a classic issue where like our old Airtable database didn't have place to store information about anodizing.
Mm-hmm.
So an order would come in, and we would propagate it to the shop floor, and we would physically write down the anodizing details on the work order slip. Sometimes customers change that midstream, or they don't know at the time that you propagate the job to the floor. Now this allows us to have that information be live. It can change up to the point at which you ship it out, basically.
Or you're going through emails at home and they send you the detail and you have to remember in the morning to write it on the thing.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And now it can exist in the database. The scan links you back to the single point of truth, basically.
Yeah. It's been huge for us. Originally when we designed Arda, we put two QR codes on each. No, first we put one, which was the link to the thing you were ordering.
Uh-huh.
And that was great and a huge efficiency boost. And then we had both where you could either go back into the system or go order the thing
directly.
And now we've just eliminated it, the one that goes directly, because it's such a useful touch point to make sure that data is being updated, to make sure, like, to leverage the tools in the system. Uh-huh. It's like sort of Poke-Yoke in a funny way. But also it feels like it keeps, I don't know. We've had an issue where like you write an SOP and then it never gets touched again.
Yeah.
Even though you're constantly evolving how things happen, mm-hmm. because it's just enough friction to not go back. But imagine if every SOP was just a QR code that said like SOP.
Yeah.
Obviously that has its own problems. Like visually you can't see it. Right. So like a manager can't theoretically observe and cross check.
Uh-huh.
But it does mean that everyone using it is immediately in a position to edit it.
Right. They're interacting with the actual root information.
And so I think there's a happy medium, which is like, we need to display some information, but also it just feels like every single document, everything in the shop, like having a very quick way to be back into a database keeps, not compliance, that's the wrong word. It's just like it keeps it from being stale. And like we've talked about this before, but it's such a huge waste to spend a lot of time on an improvement that then doesn't get used.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you learn from it, so that reduces the waste somewhat, but still, I mean, way better to use the thing. So we put all this time into SOPs. Let's update those SOPs. Let's reference them. When we learn something new about a new QC check that should happen,
mm-hmm.
let's document that somewhere in a particular place. Like yesterday, I got an email from one of our vendors about information related to one of the components we order from them. And I was like, great, I have a spot for this. I went and I scanned the card. I copy and pasted that information into the notes, and now it just lives in a place that's associated with that thing. This is sort of a nice segue into on the Lean Made Simple podcast, this last episode, they talked about inventory management, like lean inventory management, I think generally, something I've been thinking quite a bit about.
Yeah.
One of the things they said on Kanban is that, so they are, it looks like they're moving to a digital backend, and they're saying that they've run for 9 years, I think I'm getting this right, but 9 years on physical cards, and now they're finally looking at a digital backend. And that Toyota thinks about sort of these computerized solutions as like you need to earn the right to use a computer, where you need to stay in the, like, work out all these kinks before just sort of leaning, using a computer sort of as a crutch.
Yeah.
And I think there's a few elements to that, and I think it has some merit, but I also, it sort of feels analogous to like, oh, if you want to be a machinist, like you need to start on manual machines before going to CNC machines. And it sort of feels like there's some merit there too, but just generally, I'm not sure that I would recommend any machining business to be running on manual machines.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, okay, there's place for it, but right, like fabrication or like repair, I think often the manual stuff is faster, but yeah. a machining business,
yeah,
it's like use the technology. It's an enabling technology that saves a lot of time. I think the downside of both of those examples, like a digital backend to Kanban, your like an ERP software, the disadvantage or CNC machines is that they tend to two things: cover up problems, and then also be so complex that they're a lot harder to kind of solve.
Yeah.
And I think often when you're diving into these things, you're going to create systemic, you're going to make errors on sort of a systems level that you could have worked out on a paper level.
Yeah.
Like your, all of your work on your job board, like I could imagine a future where you make that digital, and you've sort of talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like the fact that you've run for what, a year, year and a half on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
Like you understand very clearly
where the hiccups are and
And like what that system needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's some merit to that statement. And then I think it's more like you, what am I trying to say here? It, maybe it's just that like, it's a rare individual or group that can sort of like maintain beginner mindset and openness to change while implementing something like a digital backend. And so I think it's easy for the sort of like prevailing attitude to be that you shouldn't do that until you've worked out all your kinks. But I don't think that's an absolute. Mm-hmm. And I do also think that, right, like software today and Coda and Airtable are both examples, or even Google Sheets, is very different than what it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, in terms of the level of flexibility that it, those sorts of like no code solutions provide. And so I can see like a decade ago, creating a digital backend really did probably lock you into a systems flow in a way that that is not necessarily true anymore. So I think we're sort of, there's been a little bit of a paradigm shift in what's available to people. Like we are both engaging in systems that are digital backends that are highly flexible and adaptable,
right,
on the fly. And that just really wasn't true a while ago, unless you had like programmer on staff. Or programmers on staff.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I will say, like, I do think the challenge is there, right? Like a whiteboard, when I or anyone else on the team walks up to a whiteboard, it's very clear to me if I want a new column to sort items into on that whiteboard, like how to pull that off, right?
Sure, yeah.
Whereas in the computer, it's sort of like, I need to have a pretty good understanding of how the data is structured and how we want to use tags and which column that tag might be in, or if we need a new column to sort by a different parameter.
Yeah.
And so I think like that is definitely a factor.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like recommending trying to think of a good analogy, but just, yeah, I mean, running a CNC shop on manual machines for 10 years and then go to CNC. And it's like, you're probably going to be out of business.
Yeah, you won't have a business.
Yeah. And so, like, I've talked to now a lot of people about how they're doing inventory management, and we can save people, like, we can just save people a lot of time right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure why we would recommend, I mean, besides the, like, business reason, right. But no, I mean, seriously, like, I'm not sure why we would recommend, like, hey, start with paper, just paper,
right?
And then
I mean, I think the thing is, like, right, with the Arda product, you're providing a more fully baked solution, right?
Well, ideally, so there's going to be
some adaptation, but that's sort of built into the system to a certain extent.
I mean, hopefully, but I think Toyota's point is still there, mm-hmm. which is that slapping a digital Band-Aid on a thing that is poorly designed is not solving the underlying waste inherent in the methodology.
Mm-hmm.
That said, like, I sort of feel like we're, like, Trojan horsing it here with a lot of companies who have never heard of Lean.
Uh-huh.
And then they're implementing Kanban, and it just turns out that, like, Kanban, Andrew and Jay were talking about this on the last episode of
Lean Production.
Lean Built. And about, like, the dual function of Kanban in a software, whatever, there's the software mm-hmm. world who has one definition, but then most manufacturers think about Kanban as an inventory management solution, which it is, but the back, like, the way Toyota, and we've talked about this, but, like, right. lowering that water level,
yeah,
exposing those rocks in the organization, like, it's funny, I think a lot of companies are going to implement it and then realize suddenly that they have a lever and they have a reliable mechanism that is worth refining in a funny way.
For reliable mechanism for what?
It immediately changes how you run a shop.
Yeah.
Because if you know you can have stuff when you want it, it begs the question of, like, well, when do you want it? And mm-hmm. then when do you know you want something? And then, oh, that means we don't need to order a lot of that thing anymore. Yeah. So where do we actually want to store that? Oh, we can just store paper. We don't need to order 5 cases of paper.
Uh-huh.
Let's order 1 case of paper and put it right under the printer. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so it's funny. I feel like we are delivering it as an inventory management tool.
Yeah.
And then it's, I hope,
it's been, this is a slight tangent, but it's been really interesting with our new tool management system.
Mm-hmm.
Now knowing that, the digital library is a reflection of our physical library.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, like, we don't have every single tool yet, 'cause we haven't gone through and, like, made sure that we have applicable inventory.
Okay.
But even just the fact that, like, it has an ID and I can check in 20 seconds whether that tool is in stock or not has really opened up my programming capability.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because I can now just be like, this is what I need. Do we have it? No. Okay. I will use this other tool. But also looking forward, there is going to be a time not too far in the future where I know that every tool that's in the digital library is available for mm-hmm. running a part.
Yeah.
And that level of freedom really opens things up in a way that in the past it was kind of like, well, I know that we use this one often, so I'm going to use this one, even though maybe it's not quite the right tool for the job, because I know we have it and it's probably in that machine. Now it's more like, okay, this is the right tool for the job. I can check quickly if we have it or not. And hopefully in the future, we just will have it and it will always be available. And so we can use the correct tool for the job more of the time.
Yeah. I think this is not a hot take by any means, but for some reason it, like, hit me as I was biking the other day. The thing we are used to in companies is that individuals are in there firefighting.
Yeah.
Solving these repetitive problems that don't need to exist, but they're, no one's, like, solving a structural systems problem once and for all, and then just freeing people up to think about more of those problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, it's kind of that. It's like, you've spent years successfully running a CNC business, solving this silly thing of like, do I have that tool? Do I not have that tool? Yeah. Should I try to find it? Cause I think I might have one, or should I just program a slower feed rate at a non-ideal, whatever. Right.
Like, yeah.
Just, and I did the same, like we joke about like the ninth lean waste of chaos. Yeah. Like, I think it's that. I think it's like, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to see how chaotic things are from within the chaos.
Right.
And then the second you strip that away, it really frees up a huge amount of work. But it's just a funny expectation of like, a good employee solves problems. Mm-hmm. But the problems most good employees are tasked with solving are really dumb. Like including in my business and including for myself.
Yeah.
And it just takes a long time to realize, like, wait a second, if I just work on eliminating that from a problem that I will ever have, then we're good. I have a funny example from this morning. We had an interesting conversation around QC at our assembly area. Uh-huh. We've had some issues with shipped orders not being correct.
Oh.
And then all of the knock-on effects of that. Like, they sent an email. Now it's my time replying to that email and deciding what we should do about it.
Yeah.
Then it's more of our time assembling a new replacement order, processing processing the thing they send back, creating that label, spending that money.
Yeah.
And the thing we're talking about, which I think is useful to me when I thought about this in this light within the paint department, which is all of that time is actually budget towards solving that problem. So if every order costs us like $50 to solve in terms of time and resources, suddenly spending like $500 on a tool that will eliminate a big chunk of that is like very reasonable. Whereas before it's like, 500, I don't know. We're not spending $500.
Right.
Right. Like, opens up a big budget in terms of time and money to solve these problems. But we spent, I don't know, 10 minutes basically an item got left out of an order. And then we have like, I don't know, 50, 60 packaged orders like waiting to ship. And then you're like, okay, which envelope was this thing meant to be in? So we spent quite a bit of time figuring that out. We did find the order eventually.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, stopping the process and going like, okay, what are, like, where's this coming from? What are the root causes? And there's probably not one.
Yeah.
Like, we've identified a few. So one of the fixes we just implemented, which I guess I should talk about on next episode, but I'll. Is our yellow card system. So I took a yellow card from By the CNC, where we use it, because it sounds like a lot of the errors are coming from getting interrupted.
Oh.
And so the thought is to just have a card on this, like, tucked into the side of the desk, that if you are going to walk away while you're in the middle of packing an order, that yellow card comes out and sits on the order. So when you come back, it's clear it's not finished. Or that it needs checking, because it sounds like a lot of the errors are sort of like the CNC stopped shipping, stopped machining. And
great if you could just make the CNC ship
soon. No, the coolant messes up the envelopes. So we implemented that, but just really like, and then we're also trying to kind of make a rule that you don't walk away in the middle of an order.
Yeah.
Right. Cause they're not big orders typically.
Right. I'm going to troubleshooting here, but it strikes me that all of this is like, those are very simple and like doable fixes for right now, but it seems like your root cause is more that it's like relying on memory to do this correctly, on the memory of the person or the attentiveness of the person.
Yeah, totally.
And it seems like there could be some pretty simple checks where it's like the order generation creates like a list of things that, you know, have to go into the order, and then you have like a bunch, like a maybe an example of each color combo that you have with a barcode, and you can just like look at what you have, match to the thing on the board with all the different colored versions, scan the ones that are in there, and if it doesn't match the order, like you can't proceed kind of a thing with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that's more complicated, but it's.
No, I mean, there's something there for sure. If you were to boil that
down, maybe get rid of the barcode situation, but like if it could even just generate a picture.
So we have that. We added that, which has helped tremendously. One of the big sources of error last week is someone somewhere changed something in the software so that it was displaying the wrong image.
Oh no.
And so we were shipping for months. It was a huge unlock for us having a visual picture with every single, because before we didn't have a photo for every single combo.
Yeah.
So we added that. And so it's up on the screen. It's so much easier than reading orange, blue. Okay. That means this orange and that blue. And this is just like, our visual cortex is pretty badass. I think it's sort of the theme of this episode.
It's true.
Anyway, so that was one source of error, which seems to be fixed now, but now it's a little unnerving where you're like, So this last problem we were solving is that one of the straps got left in the sewing machine.
Oh.
And then the subsequent five orders or more didn't involve sewing. They're all pin ladder locks. And so otherwise you'd be like, I forgot to put that in that package. And that would be solved immediately. But so it also makes me think that just like the visual clutter in that station is sort of biting us.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't visually stick out.
Right.
So,
and it
onwards
does,
and upwards.
Yeah, it just seems like reading a list. We have a funny, my wife and I, we both.
Wait, just one last piece.
Yeah.
What I wanted to say is like, I think organizationally, it's easy to try to find an employee who doesn't make mistakes there because they're so badass.
Yeah.
And actually, it's better to put an employee there who does make mistakes.
Right.
And solve the systems so that it is an easier task and you don't have to like tie up someone like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Someone who's anyway, that's kind of the point is like,
I was just going to say, it's remarkable how bad we are at comparing lists. My wife and I have very different ways of grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
She like hates having her phone out all the time. So she takes like a paper list,
okay,
but she doesn't carry a pencil, so she can't cross things off.
Oh.
I prefer to make a list on my phone. And every time I get something, I delete it out of the list so that I only see what's remaining.
Okay.
Because I've just found like if I have a list of things that's 20 things long and I'm trying to compare each thing in order, I always get it wrong.
Uh-huh.
Or almost always get it wrong.
Like you'll come home without something.
Yeah, because like whatever, my brain just skipped over butter.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I've been there.
I was like, I got milk. Butter's next. I think I got that. Or I'm going to come back for that or whatever. And then I never do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet coming back to the visual controls or some sort of like simple comparison. Cause I feel like handing somebody a list that says this is what needs to ship, like the odds of it going wrong are actually decently high.
Yeah, they certainly are. I can tell you percentage wise how high they are. Yeah, so we have some other ideas for solutions, and I'm sure we can move in the right direction. But I think I just want to highlight kind of how we tend to think of people doing a good job who are able to firefight or able to exert so much mental like acuity to not mess those things up.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we are just burying the thing we should be working on. And anyway.
Yeah, it's a hard balance, right? Because you don't want to make like business ending or
certainly
or relationship ending mistakes,
right?
And obviously, the path of least resistance is just to have the badass employee.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's important to put people in there who are maybe not naturally attuned to or not naturally given those skill sets.
Yeah, I guess. I would rather put someone in there who is super good at systemizing and simplifying and like Kaizen improving the fundamental operations than I would like someone who's really good at the thing.
Yeah.
To your point though. Yeah. Mistakes can get kind of expensive kind of quick.
They can.
Like international orders and stuff like that kind of can suck.
I think what you need is people like you with spelling, like you've talked about, or dyslexia, right? Like you're aware of it. And so you put things in place to help deal with it.
That's what I like to think. I did discover a couple of years back that when I said like see link below, I was spelling it bellow. So that was, you know, but yeah, we try.
Yeah.
Okay, this is kind of pedantic and dumb, but also not dumb. So, you know, people say like little things add up.
Uh-huh.
So with improvements, little things do not in fact add up. They compound. And it is kind of beyond our human comprehension how compounding works, even if you understand it mathematically.
Uh-huh.
Like there's the classic, like if I gave you a penny and then every day I doubled the number of pennies you have, mm-hmm. like what would you have by the end of a year?
Right.
And it's like, I forget what it is, but it's like, you know,
more than most of us have.
Yeah. Like way more. And so it's kind of that effect. So the cool thing about improvements is that they're freeing up the thing that you use to make improvements, which is time.
Mm-hmm.
And so organizationally it is like a runaway train kind of an effect.
Yeah.
Which is pretty powerful, but really hard to underestimate. And mm-hmm. so I was thinking about this because I think it's very easy to not continue to make improvements. Like it's very easy to fall off of that, like let's spend an hour every day on improvements.
Yeah.
It's super hard.
Yeah.
And we have succeeded at times and then it fades and we get into this like get in there and start production, right? We have a lot to do. Let's bang it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about like the difficulty about classifying which activities are improvements, which ones aren't. Like right now we were sinking a lot of time into Arda and yeah. into like getting that system. And that is an improvement to be sure, but yeah. it's a little beyond just an improvement. you know, it's beyond where we would have gotten it if it was just
for
simply
you.
For internal use. Yeah. Which is awesome, but it is not. Anyway, so like it's been hard to with that project and just other things going on, it's been hard to get into the shop and make these little adjustments to our work environment that make the work faster, easier, less confusing, less error prone,
mm-hmm.
safer, you know, all those things. It's just so easy to fall off of that. And it's just very helpful to remember that it's not that all these little things add up. It's like all of these little things compound.
Yeah.
That's all.
Interesting.
End rant.
I had a little thing here just about the importance of testing. We're still working on our like tool setup cart slowly. But the point I wanted to make is it's not complete yet in part because we've made so many design changes already as we've like I had an idea of what this was going to be, right? It was going to be like this half height, half width bun rack.
Okay.
On a dolly.
Yep.
With a thing on top that we put tools in.
Okay.
And immediately was like, that's too low. It's like, okay, let's put it on blocks. Okay. That's cool. Then we're going to just put a sheet pan on top and use our existing, tool holder. Like we have these little like, caddies for BT30 tool holders.
Okay.
They were designed before we had tool tags.
Okay.
And so you can't, not all the tool tags can go the same direction.
Yeah.
They bump into each other. And we discovered we printed some more caddies and we're like, we're going to stick these on top. And then we put them on top and we're like, oh, actually this doesn't work because the tool tags all end up interfering with each other. So actually we have to put it on plywood. Okay. We're going to put it on plywood. Okay. Now we have to lift it up because the tool taper is sticking through the plywood, hit the frame of the bun rack. And
oh, now we have to take the blocks off because now it's too tall.
No, okay. Didn't go that far. But I guess that's all a bunch of random details. The point being that if we had, I want to have like 8 of these probably.
Let's build 8.
Yeah. And yeah. we'd built them all the same way. They would have all sucked. And so I think it's so hard to remember to do this testing. And right now the thing we're making is like really ugly. Like we're just like taking random wood that was around the shop and blocking it up and doing all this stuff. but we're figuring out so much about how it should end up being.
Yeah, and there's two interesting things. Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff there, but I think one is like being... It is so easy to overestimate our like wisdom or foresight or intuition about like, what could go wrong, right? It's like making a cart with a bun rack. Like, let's just full send. Let's get 10. Like, I was impressed that you were like, no, I'm ordering one and paying extra for shipping for the one than it would have cost if I'd just been like, you know, we will use, we're definitely going to want 10. So let's just get 10. And then maybe we'll build one at a time and do single piece flow, but like we'll just have the supplies for 10. Uh-huh. Like it takes a level of like discipline to be like, no, because we have no idea how well it's going to work. We just don't. Like, the other is about like organizational trust. And I just think it's so critical. The ability to build really crappy looking prototypes, I think, is fundamentally based on people in an organization trusting that their superiors won't judge them on the quality, quote unquote, of the prototype.
Yeah.
It's more like the quality of the learning.
Yeah.
And otherwise, people like to present like really polished stuff, even though that's just such a waste of everyone's time. Uh-huh. Right. To build like a really beautiful version of a crappy design.
Right.
When you could have learned it in like, I don't know, a quarter of the time.
Yeah.
With screws sticking out everywhere. And then it's like, all right, well, this is really unsafe. But like, yeah, we like the function. The ergonomics are good. Let's cut off the ends of these screws. And
why did you make the screws stick out extra? Oh, I just put them there so it would look crappy.
No, I mean, but if you think about it, like trimming down a screw.
Didn't want birds to land on it.
Yeah, keep the pigeons off. I don't know. That conflicts with safety, so probably worth trimming the screws, but it is also time that is spent not answering the question.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's an interesting example because it conflicts, but there's so many examples.
Where it doesn't.
Where it doesn't conflict, but it's so tempting.
Yeah.
To make it look good. Oh, I know, like, well, we're going to want the top sanded, so let me sand it before I assemble it or paint it or...
Right.
And I don't know. Yeah.
And then, oh, it was the wrong size.
It was the wrong size. Let's throw that in the garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have been talking a lot about single piece flow in developing features for Arda.
Oh, uh-huh.
It's very interesting. It's so counterintuitive. Talking all the things we just talked about.
To like potential
Kyle
customers
doing all the programming, and then also to customers.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like, okay, let's take a tiny piece and get it across the finish line.
Yeah.
And just see, let's all regroup. And I think it's a big shift because you are sort of admitting that you have no idea what you're doing in a funny way, which in a higher sense is like you have a tremendous amount of, like, you know what you're doing in having the awareness to say like, we don't know what we're doing, but it's a weird one. Cause people are like, great, we designed a great system. And it's like, did we?
Yeah.
Did we though? Or does it suck? We don't know yet. Let's go find out.
You've designed a big system.
Yeah. Right. You spent a lot of time on a big system. Yeah.
Cool. Good place to wrap up.
Indeed.
Except you have highlighted here the cost of chaos, which we will just drive home one more time.
Oh, huge cost.
Ninth lean waste.
The ninth lean waste of chaos. This has been, I said this, but we've been doing a lot of product demos and a lot of just talking through people's systems and getting to look, you know, behind the curtain when they send you their spreadsheet that they're doing orders out of. And it is not surprising, but it is outrageous how many customers, how many businesses just have horrible systems for ordering. And it is one person's, often multiple people are spending a lot of time on that one function.
Yeah.
And this is across the board. And the issue is that I see is like, this is the cost of chaos. Like in a chaotic system where everything feels one-off and everything feels unique and critical and like everyone needs to have a say, it's just so hard to make improvements.
Yeah.
And then the second you're kind of like, hey, what if we systemize it this way? which in 3 weeks is going to turn out to be totally the wrong way. But it is such a huge help, because then you're like, oh,
that was wrong.
That was wrong. And this is exactly why it was wrong. And here's a better system, not just like, man, we should hire another really smart person to like get in the trenches with me. Okay. I think Jay Pearson talks about that in one of his talks about lean.
Yeah.
Like, it was him running around with his head cut off, and he was like, I must need to hire. Then he hired, and then it was two of them running around with their head cut off. And it's like, right. Yeah. Cause it's just chaotic and there's no systems.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of times creating these systems, even if they're wrong, is sort of like you're like, it's like a scratch sticker. Like, you're removing parts of the picture. They may not be the part that you actually need to view, right? Like, they might not be the part where the number is or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I think there was this,
it's probably a better analogy, but I know exactly what you mean.
Or like, you're walking around in a dark room, like shining a flashlight.
Right. And it's like, what if you like brought in a light?
Or even like, if you are just walking around with a flashlight, like, you have to go around the whole room before you know what's in the room. That process is frustrating. And yeah, if you can bring a bigger light, that's cool. But oftentimes we don't have a team big enough or whatever, wherewithal big enough.
Instead of like running through a dark room to get to the other side because you have to, and you're like tripping over stuff and bloodying yourself. And
yeah. Or even just being like getting to one wall and being like, this seems like a good wall. We're going to stay here. Right. And you don't know that there's actually like a couch on the other wall that would be a lovely place to have a seat, you know?
Yeah. High cost of chaos. And like, implementing a system to try is just such a, such a big step, and makes you see an even bigger issue that's like sort of haunting the organization. Yeah.
What are those ghosts doing in your closet?
Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Anyhow, slight rant, but
good rant.
Good. We will see you all in a week. Thank you for listening so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
You can find me on the internet at lichenprecision.com, on the Instagram at lichen_MFG. We have a Patreon. Go check it out. Mm-hmm. Link in the description. And
you can find me at austere_manufacturing on Instagram and austeremfg.com on the internet. You can also check out our Kanban database at arda.cards on the internet. This week it does actually work, so that's cool. If you want to check it out or get a demo, please feel free to reach out. And we'll be back next week.
See ya.